Well, good morning, everybody. Please be seated.
First of all, I see we have some young folks here, and I'd like to welcome the ninth grade speech and debate students from Pawalu School in Douglas County. And Callie Campbell. Ms. Campbell, you're the teacher. There you are. Welcome to the Nevada Supreme Court. And I hope that you become enlightened, and maybe some of anybody want to be a judge or a lawyer that's in the audience here? One man, right? One over? Now, you notice we have 5 males and 2 females on the Supreme Court, so just because you happen to be a female doesn't mean you can't be a justice of the Supreme Court, and the guys can be justices too. So, well, this is an oral argument is scheduled today, and we have our first case is case number 60298, State of Nevada versus Jermaine Frederick. We have Ms. Mercer for the appellant, and Mr. Waters for the respondent. Are you ready to proceed, Ms. Mercer? Well, Ms. Mercer, I'm going to ask you to do something since we have these kids in the audience. Would you tell them a little bit about the case before you start? And then, Mr. Waters, would you tell what you're going to be doing? Just go ahead and turn around and be at ease.
This is a case where the state of Nevada took an appeal based upon a district court's ruling. She allowed a defendant to withdraw a plea based upon her belief that an extrajudicial district court rule expanded the jurisdiction of a justice of the peace. And under the Constitution, the legislature is the party that sets the jurisdictional boundaries of the justice of the peace. It was the state's position that really wasn't the issue below, and that her permitting the defendant to withdraw the plea based on that was an error. And so we brought it up to the Supreme Court.
Mr. Waters?
That's essentially correct. This is going to be very exciting. I'm not going to lie yet. It's an issue about the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court. And so it's not like, did they catch the right guy kind of stuff, unfortunately, but it's really a jurisdictional argument about justice of the peace exercise certain powers which are exclusive to the district court, sort of separation of powers.
Ms. Mercer, would you tell the students, what's the underlying case, the actual criminal case?
It's an assault with deadly weapon and battery, domestic violence strangulation.
Great. You ready to proceed?
I am. Thank you, Your Honors. I appreciate your patience.
Now, it's a court order from the Chief Justice to make this an exciting case for these students. So, Ms. Mercer, I'm putting the pressure on you and Mr. Waters. Make it exciting.
We'll do our best. I'm sure Mr. Waters will be much more successful. And as a preliminary matter, Your Honors, I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, if possible.
Certainly.
As the state outlined in its briefs below, we believe that the district court in this case committed an abuse of discretion in finding that the 8th Judicial District Court Rule 1.48 enlarged the jurisdiction of the Justice of the Peace in violation of the Constitution. From the state's perspective, the issue below was whether or not a Justice of the Peace can also hold the position as a hearing master. And in the state's position, there is absolutely no authority that would support a position or support the position that a Justice of the Peace cannot also hold that position as a hearing master.
Is there anything that specifically prohibits it as far as a Justice of the Peace acting as a hearing master?
No, Your Honor. Not that we were able to discover. And in fact, when the NRS that allowed for the appointment of hearing masters in the criminal division was before the legislature for them to determine whether or not the bill should pass, 3 of you all were there to urge them to leave the decision as to who could be appointed and what duties they would hold to the justices or to the judiciary branch. There were some legislatures that questioned whether or not those duties or those qualifications could be outlined in statute or should be outlined in statute. And after hearing 3 of Your Honor's arguments in support of leaving that to the judiciary, they ultimately decided that the judiciary best knows how to manage its cases and left that discretion to you all.
Does the Hernandez decision have an effect on your argument today as far as what we ruled as the coroner's inquest hearing about JP's not being able to hear that?
Your Honor, that case is distinguishable from this case in that case the Clark County Commission delegated jurisdiction to the Justice of the Peace, in fact, ordered them to preside over the coroner's inquest. That obviously expanded their jurisdiction as Justices of the Peace in violation of the Constitution. What we have here is not EDCR 1.48 doesn't empower a Justice of the Peace to take pleas. It doesn't say from here on out all Justices of the Peace will take pleas on felony cases following a bindover. What it does is create the qualifications and the duties of a criminal hearing master. And in EDCR 1.48, as this court is aware, it allows for, or one way to be qualified for the position is to be a Justice of the Peace or Senior Justice of the Peace. So essentially, what we have here is Justice of the Peace Saragossa also sitting as a hearing master. And then the issue is whether or not that is prohibited by law. Under NRS 3.245, there is no limitation as to who can be appointed a hearing master. Again, that decision was left to the discretion of the judiciary branch. But the purpose of that legislation was to deal with ever-increasing caseloads in the district court and to improve judicial economy and efficiency. Keeping that in mind, it makes perfect sense that a Justice of the Peace would be qualified as a hearing master to take pleas, because by allowing a Justice of the Peace like Saragossa to take a plea, you are eliminating an additional appearance that would otherwise be required. The way it works in the 8th Judicial District Court right now is that after a waiver, the defendant is taken to what's referred to as lower level, the master calendar, where a hearing master takes his plea and sets it for trial. With Saragossa taking the pleas, the case is automatically sent to the department that it would otherwise be assigned to. because there is no limitation in the statute.
Let's back up, though, for a moment to the Constitution. Article 6, Section 8 says the legislature shall determine the number of justices of the peace and fix by law their qualifications, their terms of office, and the limits of their jurisdiction. The only statute that answers what their jurisdiction is, there, I don't see any statute that gives justices of the peace jurisdiction to take felony pleas. On the contrary, the statutes as written seem to limit their jurisdiction to misdemeanors.
And I guess,
how do you answer the constitutional problem with your argument?
The answer from the state's perspective is that when she takes those pleas, she's no longer acting as a justice of the peace. Rather, she's acting as a hearing master appointed by the district court.
Now, and your position is the legislature itself authorized that by way of 3.245.
By not restricting
what the JPs can do. The legislature essentially is authorizing or expanding their jurisdiction, and this isn't a usurpation of the legislature's power as it was in Hernandez.
Correct. That's exactly
but
what our position
nothing
is.
Nothing in NRS Chapter 3 says justices of the peace have jurisdiction to flip in and become hearing masters, correct?
No, that's correct. It does say that.
What do you do with Chapter 5, which says expressly justices of the peace may be municipal court judges? You can have that dual role. To me, you have the legislature expressing something, a permission to be both a municipal court judge and a justice of the peace, and you have no similar expression by the legislature in this context. To me, on a straight statutory analysis, constitutional analysis, however efficient what you're proposing is, there's a constitutional issue there.
Okay. Well, I guess that's where, in the state's reply brief and the appellant's reply brief, they set forth the doctrine of incompatibility. And I think that when you look at the statutes governing the restrictions on the judiciary, what they may or may not do once taken office, it seemed clear that the legislature's intent, and when they have restricted the ability of a judiciary to do something outside of the scope of their ordinary duties, is to make sure that there's no appearance of impropriety. Under the doctrine of incompatibility, as outlined in the state's reply brief, a an individual cannot hold two positions that would inhibit the ability to perform the duties of the other, or that would give the public reason to question. It's more of keeping an appearance of impropriety to the public. And if you look at the statutes governing in Nevada what a judge cannot do or can do, what you see is a pattern along those lines of trying to make sure there's no appearance of impropriety to the public. In other words,
would it be your position under the Hernandez case that we could, by court rule, say justices of the peace should act as hearing officers over inquests? In other words, is it the source of the articulated power? Is it if it's a court rule, the separation of powers issue is different?
Well, I think what also distinguishes the Hernandez decision from this instant case is that there was a statute that specifically prohibited the justice of the peace's involvement in the coroner's inquest.
So what you're saying is that in the Hernandez case, if there had been a statute that said that the county commissioners, in creating a coroner's inquest, may identify whomever they choose as presiding officers, that would have satisfied the requirement, statutory requirement.
I'm sorry, could you repeat your question?
In the Hernandez case, had the legislature passed a statute that permitted the county commissioners to create a coroner's inquest process, and they could pick anybody they chose to be the presiding judge of the process, that would have been enough to allow them to pick justices of the peace in the ordinance?
As long as there was no restriction that prohibited a justice of the peace from serving in that capacity, yes, that would be our position, I believe.
So it would be the same as the
statute would have been
4-5.
Correct. But then again, I mean, the issue is not one of whether...
Reviewing the statute in this case and under my hypothetical as an enabling statute that empowers the county commissioners in the one case and the chief judge in the other case to appoint whomever they choose, including justices of the peace.
As long as it's not conferring jurisdiction upon a justice of the peace, I believe that there's no issue with it.
As long as there's not some other statute that prohibits the justice of the peace from serving.
And you are not delegating those responsibilities to a justice of the peace in their capacity as a justice of the peace.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to this doctrine of incompatibility, there were several cases cited in the state's reply brief in which similar situations were addressed, specifically in the State versus Lee decision. I see that my time is up.
So no, you have 5 minutes
left. 5 minutes left? Okay.
Yeah, and you can reserve whatever you want, so you can stop.
I did want to reserve 5 minutes.
Okay, well, so you stop this time then.
Thank you.
Schwartz, on behalf of respondent, Mr. Frederick.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is William Waters. I'm the Clark County Public Defender's Office. I represent Mr. Frederick along with Mr. Sachs. Believe me, no one was happier when Hernandez came out 2 weeks ago, and I immediately got a copy of it, and I read it because I think that I think this court took a very clear position on that.
Why isn't it entirely distinguishable from this case in the sense that the county commission, our point there was the county commission didn't have the authority to usurp the legislature's.
Because the district court judges don't have the authority to usurp the legislature's.
Well, what about the NRS 3.245, which the legislature empowered the judiciary to create masters?
Now, the concept...
Without exception.
Right. Well, they empowered the district court judges to create masters. They did not enlarge the criminal jurisdiction of the justice of the peace. Now, here's the key. The Supreme Court says that they will fix the jurisdiction by law, meaning by statute. So the legislature would have to pass a law which would say justices of the peace can also accept felony pleas, can sentence on felony offenses, those sort of things. Although that would be a problem because those are within the original jurisdiction of the district court. But nevertheless, they would have to pass a law that gives the justice of the peace that power. So presumably the law which we're talking about that they passed, 3.245, there's no mention of justice of the peace. No mention whatsoever. It's
so that doesn't act as an exclusion.
Well, here's the problem, though. Because the jurisdiction has to be passed by law, what you have is The legislature, under your scenario, Justice Perry, the legislature delegating its lawmaking responsibility to the district court.
Why can't it do that?
Because this court has said over and over and over and over again that one co-equal branch of the government.
But the Constitution, isn't that the legislature's prerogative?
The legislature's function is to create law. This court has said in Benegas versus State Industrial Insurance System, one of the settled maxims in constitutional law is that the power conferred upon the legislature to make laws cannot be delegated to any other body or authority. Galloway versus Truesdale. Generally, the legislature may not confer or impose powers non-judicial in character upon the judiciary. Sheriff versus Loopman. Commission of Ethics versus Hardy. We hold that this legislature cannot waive constitutionally based structural protections such as the separation of powers doctrine. Furthermore, we conclude that the legislature cannot, by enacting a statute that delegates certain powers to another branch of government, waive any separation of powers.
But when you've got constitutional provisions giving the legislature the responsibility and the authority for determining a justice court's jurisdiction, it seems a little bit a matter of semantics here that you're saying.
But it's not the
justice of the peace can't act as a master when you get.
Well, a justice of the peace cannot take a felony plea. If a master's job is to take a felony plea, then a justice of the peace cannot be a master.
You well, can what have if a the justice of the peace is sitting as a master and not as a justice of the peace? You don't agree that you can have this two-hat theory?
I don't agree with that because, and factually, Justice Perry, I mean, let me take you back to Justice Court 4 when this went down. This was not Judge Saragossa getting off the bench and changing to a different colored robe or going to a phone booth and changing into a different outfit or setting on a different calendar or moving to a separate courtroom. This happened like that. It happened where I'm taking a misdemeanor plea and I'm sentencing you on the misdemeanor. Now, where's the guilty plea agreement? Now let me take your felony plea and send you to district court for a sentencing date. This idea that...
Mr. Waters, you're using that example, but would it have made a difference for you if she in fact got off the bench, took off a robe, then got back on the bench without a robe and accepted that plea?
No. I mean, it wouldn't. To me, no, because she is a justice of the peace. She's an elected justice.
Well, let me throw back at you EDCR 1.48. When you read it, there's another little thing. As you were talking, I was reading back through it just to check it. And if we decide that, and part of the fiction is they're not acting as a justice of the peace, as you're talking about, and if the justice of the peace is not limited as a person from doing other things, then under EDCR 1.48, it says as the district court can appoint a master who is also a member of the state bar in good standing for 5 continuous years. So as a justice of the peace or someone in good standing for 5 years, I guess my question is, can the justice of the peace do other things that don't interfere with their job as a justice of the peace?
Theoretically, but in this case, doing what she's doing, which is taking a felony plea, does interfere with her job because it's not expressly her, that jurisdiction, that power.
She expressly prevented from doing other things.
Not other things, Justice Douglas.
When not acting as a justice of the peace.
Well, and I mean, that is really, I guess, the best way to answer that is, what is she in the moment she takes that felony plea?
You know, based upon the hypothetical you were given, if you would like us to write something that says she must step off the bench,
well,
do 3 pirouettes, and then step back on the bench, and then she can act as a special master.
Well, Hernandez, though, is very important for this issue as well, because the ACLU argued in Hernandez this same point that the appellant's making here, that in the capacity as coroner's inquest presiding officer, that justice of the peace is not a justice of the peace anymore, that they are merely a presiding officer over the inquest, and they've sort of stepped out of that role as a justice of the peace. And this court said, the ACLU has pointed to no authority that allows an entity other than the legislature to assign duties to JPs, judicial or otherwise. Nonetheless, justices of the peace are appointed as presiding officers of the inquest by virtue of their positions as justices of the peace, meaning that the statute said, or the county ordinance said, a justice of the peace will be the presiding officer.
But that was the county dictating what the JP's jurisdiction was going to be,
and this
as opposed to the legislature dictating perhaps a another responsibility for the justice of the peace.
Here's why this is important, because the same thing. It's, I mean, switch the county code with 8th Judicial District Court Rule 1.48. I mean, essentially they're sort of working, sort of look at them together here.
I'm looking at the county code similar to NRS 3.245.
And Mr. Waters, again, if I can amplify, that was my concern that Justice Peregrine just got to. Isn't there a big, big difference between the county dictating what Justice Peace could do versus the courts by rule that is consistent with the statute? And Rule 1.48 was approved by the Supreme Court. It's an 8th Judicial District Court rule. The courts have a right to regulate court procedure, don't they?
And well, procedure, that's correct. You're absolutely right, Justice.
Okay. Why then what's the problem then?
This isn't about procedure. This is about jurisdiction. This is about expanding. The district court does not have the power to step over the legislature and say we're going to give powers not enumerated in law, to a justice of the peace. The reason why I'm trying to make this comparison between the county code and 1.48 is because in 1.48, just like this court said, they're appointed because they're justice of the peace. In 1.48, they're appointed because they're a justice of the peace. It's the same language. So if this court has already said, like, well, there is no distinction. You can't be one or the other. The moment you're presiding over the inquest, you're not acting in your capacity. No, you are, because in this case, the county ordinance specifically said that's why you're doing it. Similarly, 1.48, the reason why you're taking felony pleas as a master is because you're a justice of the peace. I think that's a decent analogy when you look at the language of the two things.
Well, what if, just for the sake of argument, what if Judge Saragosa, who's an elected justice of the peace, was a pro tem justice of the peace, which they have pro tems there, and she came in and did it as a pro tem, and had the qualifications, the 5 years and all, would there be something wrong with that?
If she's a pro tem, she's exercising the powers of a justice of the peace mm-hmm. temporarily. Mm-hmm. Again, the powers of a justice of the peace are set by the legislature, not by the district court. I understand, and I'm not trying to say district court judges don't have sort of the right to have the legislature off their back with respect to administrative things and so forth. And if this was strictly an administrative thing, then that's one thing. But this is not. This is increasing the jurisdiction.
May I ask you a question on your earlier argument? You do not disagree, though, that if we had a statute that said specifically, the legislature hereby grants jurisdiction to the justices of the peace to act as hearing masters for purposes of taking guilty pleas, and if they harmonized that with NRS 171-196, which currently says
Right. Exactly. They
can't be called upon to plead in justice court to a felony plea, you would have no problem with that.
Bingo. Absolutely. You're right. Because that's the legislative function. That's their job.
That's what I was.
And if they want to, if this could all be, you know, we have a legislature meeting in February. If the state wants Judge Saragosa or any justice of the peace to start taking felony pleas, you submit a bill to the legislature and say, all we need you to do is just increase the jurisdiction of the justice of the peace in harmony with the 171-196, which sort of gives them a limited jurisdiction.
Not excluding them, why isn't the argument the same?
Well, I'm sorry.
By not excluding them as being able to take felony pleas as a master. Why is it the same thing?
I.e., since there's no prohibition, why isn't it okay?
It's constitutional, isn't it?
Well, and yeah, I keep going back to that. It's not that you have to assume that the absence of language in a statute means that, you know, they meant to exclude them.
You got to be careful doing that.
Well, counsel, did you find anything in the legislative history of 3.245 that suggested that justices of the peace would be appointed to fill this capacity?
Justice Hardesty, I've read through it a dozen times. The words justice of the peace are never even mentioned in the committee hearing minutes. Three members of this Supreme Court were actually testified in support of 3.245. Justice Gibbons was actually on the Supreme Court at the time. Justice Hardesty and Justice Sata were district court judges at the time. There's no mention of justice of the peace. Now, there is a lot of mention from the legislatures. I believe specifically Assemblywoman Angle, Assemblyman Gustafson, Assemblyman Carpenter, Assemblyman Osagera, Assemblyman Horn. were very concerned, and they even say at some points, like, whoa, you're asking us to give you a lot as far as what their duties are going to be, not who it's going to be, what their duties are going to be. And we're a little concerned about that because we think maybe we should have a say in that. And Your Honor, Justice Hardesty said, look, we're in the best position to know what we need. And then there was some talk about what the qualifications might be. At no time did anyone say, you know what, just make a justice of the peace, a hearing master, enlarge their jurisdiction, and then we're done with this. We don't have to worry about any of this stuff. Then we can just have them do it. And over and over and over again, there was talk about the selection process, that it would be an application vetted by the bench, the bar, commissions. These would be people that have certain specialized areas of expertise, that you're not going to get some, you know, just some joker who's going to be a hearing master. You're going to get like a very qualified person because there was talk about it's going to be very similar to the process that's in place when a district court judge retires and has to be replaced. There was a lot of talk about that, but there wasn't talk about, you know what, just give us the power to let a justice of the peace do this. And that's the thing. So you cannot assume that the legislature sort of inferred that, well, we're going to give you this broad power to create the position and the, I guess, the things that they do. And along the way, if you want to expand the criminal jurisdiction of a justice of the peace in doing so, well, that's cool too, especially when there are cases that say you can't delegate that responsibility.
On a separate question, as part of your preparation for this case, have there been any other examples that you're aware of in which a justice of the peace in Clark County has been appointed by the chief judge to serve in this capacity other than this one?
This was the only one, and it was by simple vote at a judge's meeting. I believe it was the first item of the agenda that day. This has never happened. What happened was, after Your Honor testified to the legislature in 2003, they created the position of criminal hearing master in the 8th Judicial District Court. That role was first occupied by Timothy Williams, who was an attorney at the Public Defender's Office before he took that job. Now it is Judge Melissa De La Garza. And that was the application process. They all went through that application process. When Judge De La Garza got that job, it was between her and Mr. Weed, who was a former DA, and other people. There was a vetting process. All pleas are handled by her. Like, that's the way, that's the system, I believe, which was set up based on 3.245. In fact, Justice Sata said in front of the committee, we have two courtrooms at the RJC that which we're reserving specifically for these people, for these masters. And Justice Sata said they're going to be full-time. They're going to be full-time.
Mr. Waters, the first hearing master was Kevin Williams, the brother of Timothy Williams first. But as to the question, when you were responding to Justice Hardesty as to the discussion before the legislature, did they ever specifically say that the justice of the peace could not do that function that you recall?
No. Because there was no conversation about justice of the peace.
So it's just kind of a neutral push.
Well, I think that...
Did they or not?
Well, no, they didn't. But the reason why it was never mentioned was because there was so much conversation about basically hiring a private attorney to take this full-time job.
So, in essence, we don't know either way based on what you've told us.
I would say that in the absence of any member testifying in front of that commission that they wanted Justice of the Peace to have that power, there is absolutely no way.
Did they specifically say they did not want them to have that power?
No, they didn't. But without saying we want them to have that power, I'm sorry, my time is up.
Go ahead and finish your thought.
Without specifically saying we want them to have that power, you can't assume that the legislature was ceding responsibilities, like ceding their lawmaking function to a co-equal branch of the government. I think the legislative history is clear that this was meant to be a position that was a full-time position, an attorney hired from Las Vegas to fill this position, not a justice of the peace who is jurisdictionally limited by the Constitution and statute. I just think that 3.245 is not the broad grant of power that the appellant suggests. And to the extent that it could ever be considered that broad a grant of power, I've cited cases that say you can't cede that lawmaking power to a co-equal branch of the government. The legislature cannot say, you know what, even though this is what you deal with every day, district court, and you're in a better position to know what jurisdiction they should or shouldn't have, we're going to go ahead and give you the power to create or fix the jurisdiction. They can't do that. This court's case law has been clear. There's a separation of powers. You're a co-equal branch. You can't delegate your responsibility, your lawmaking responsibilities, to another co-equal branch.
Thank Was there any discussion that as long as somebody like J.P. Cervos is going to take a plea, if it's a gross misdemeanor, could she sentence?
A hearing master, a lawfully and duly appointed hearing master under the 8th Judicial District Court rules can sentence on gross misdemeanors because that's specifically enumerated within 1.48. The District Court, through the Supreme Court's order, has given them that power to sentence on gross misdemeanors. But that has to be a District Court hearing master, not someone who's jurisdictionally limited in that capacity.
What about the salary of the JP versus the hearing master?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, Cervos is technically entitled to two salaries at this point. I mean, because she's absolutely entitled to her salary as Justice of the Peace. And whether it's whether people think less of her or not, she could literally go in today and say, I want to collect my salary as a hearing master because I'm occupying dual roles. Why can't I make $300,000 a year for the two things that I do?
But if she doesn't, isn't she saving the taxpayers money because if you have to pay hearing masters and employ them as separate county employees, it costs money. And if Melissa Cervos, I'm sure, didn't bill extra money for the doing this, it's a cost-saving factor for the Clark
and
County.
Sure, that was probably the thinking behind it, and God bless her for saving the taxpayers some money, but she's entitled to it, and if she wasn't so altruistic, she could go collect that money. I mean, that's
in your point. Research and preparation, did you find any constraints, either in the judicial code or in state statutes, that prohibit an elected justice of the peace from engaging in other employment activities outside of her elected duties and responsibilities?
Employment in the sense that she draws a paycheck or?
No.
I would say that I did point out in my answering brief the idea that there is the Judicial Code of Ethics that prohibits being the head of a political organization. Now, I presume if you're the head of the Clark County Republican Party, you may be able to draw a salary, but the Judicial Ethics Code says you can't do that while you're a Justice of the Peace. And again, that goes to this idea that, well, you're a Justice of the Peace between 9 and 5, and then when you go home at 6 o'clock, you're no longer a Justice of the Peace. If, you know, my girlfriend and I walked up to Judge Cervos's house at 12 midnight with a marriage license and said, can you marry us right now? She wouldn't say, whoa, I'm off the clock. It's 6 o'clock. I no longer have the powers of a Justice of the Peace. Of course she has that power because that's what she's elected. The powers come with the office. So I would say that's the example that you know, there are plenty of prohibitions against your activity as a judge or a Justice of the Peace or a district court judge that we have. For example, the idea that, like, you can be head of a political party and a Justice of the Peace at the same time. Judicial Ethics Code prohibits that.
Mr. Waters, I don't know if this came up in your argument before Judge Leavitt, but was there any discussion that justices of the peace, and specifically I recall the Justice of the Peace, Togliatti, who's now the chief district judge, sat in her drug court proceedings and district court case numbers while she was a justice of the peace is like a substitute for Judge Lehman and the other judge. Did that come up? Or
it never came up.
Does it matter in this particular case?
I mean, that I'll be honest with you. That's before my time because I wasn't around when...
Well, we're a lot older people.
Sorry. I wasn't around when Judge Togliatti was a JP. Since I've been an attorney, she's always been a district court judge, so I don't remember. I don't know.
It didn't come up in the argument.
It never.
Okay,
never.
That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Waters.
Right, thank you.
Ms. Mercer. You have about 4 minutes and 49 seconds.
Initially, I would just point out that the respondent in this case still has not addressed the issue of whether or not it's inappropriate of Cervos to wear dual hats in this situation.
Well, let's take this example following on Justice Gibbons' comments. Paragraph 16 of the local rule allows for the master to preside over the drug court calendar and attending to all drug court-related duties and procedures. One of the functions of a drug court judge is to incarcerate felons, even for limited periods of time, who violate the conditions of the drug court. Does that run contrary to the provisions in 171, 196, which limits the authority of the justice of the peace to deal with only misdemeanor matters?
And again, I guess you have to revert back to, from the state's perspective, this isn't an issue of enlargement of the justice of the peace jurisdiction. What it is an issue of whether or not it's appropriate of her to wear two separate hats. One is a justice of the peace and another as a hearing officer.
The hypothetical that I posit is that it would appear that the statute permitted the district court to create by rule any enumerated participation in, quote, subordinate, close quote, criminal proceedings, which, quite frankly, deals primarily with felony and gross misdemeanor crimes. That would seem to be contradictory to the express provision stated in 171-196, doesn't it?
I'm not sure I understand your question. I apologize.
Okay, then we'll pass.
Okay. And again, Mr. Water, or the respondent in this case, failed to cite any authority that would support the proposition that Miss, or that Justice of the Peace Zaragoza cannot also simultaneously sit as a hearing master. The only restriction in the NRS upon a Justice of the Peace activities outside of her office as a Justice of the Peace is 4.215, which prohibits her from acting as an attorney or a counselor. And that's for obvious reasons. You don't want that appearance of impropriety.
Isn't it a prerequisite that you be an attorney or counselor to be a hearing master?
An attorney or counselor with 5 years of practice, or a justice of the peace, or a district court judge, or a senior judge, or...
And so I prove my point. I mean, you're back to the attorney qualification. She's practicing as an attorney because she's either a justice of the peace, or if she's in her other hat, she's got to be an attorney to qualify under 1.48. So you've just locked yourself into a rhetorical trap.
Under 1.48, there's a similar provision that prohibits her from practicing law outside of the bench. I don't think that the two positions are incongruous, because a justice of the peace is still a neutral, unbiased party. A hearing master is still...
Well, I have no problems with their qualifications. Mine is purely... Melissa Zaragoza is a very able jurist. I'm not contesting that. My only point is... Separation of powers constrains us in what we can tolerate in the way of incursion from one branch to the other, or delegation. And here I'm troubled by the idea that you have a statute, 171-196, that says justices of the peace's jurisdiction is limited to misdemeanors, essentially. And then you have a court rule that expands that for purposes of taking felony pleas.
Well, I guess that the court rule, though, is authorized pursuant to NRS 3.245, which gave that discretion to the judicial branch, because the legislative history, as I pointed out, indicates that the assemblymen and women were, by the time it was time to vote on the bill, persuaded that the judiciary was in the best position to manage their caseload and determine who's qualified and who's not, and determine what duties they should hold.
What about the Hardy case on the legislature trying to delegate discipline of legislative members to an executive branch agency? We held that was an unconstitutional delegation by the legislature of their authority to discipline their own members. Here, it's their authority to declare the jurisdiction of the justices of the peace.
And again, I would just revert back to my initial position that this isn't an enlargement of the jurisdiction of the Justice of the Peace. This is allowing her to wear two hats.
Justice Hardesty.
Doesn't state law prohibit a Justice of the Peace from engaging in any activity, including the practice of law, outside of their duties as Justice of the Peace?
The only statute that I was able to find is the NRS 0.421, or 4215, the restriction on practice of law outside of the Justice of the Peace position, which is advocating on behalf of clients, because you don't want there to be, an appearance of impropriety. So it makes perfect sense. And as the respondent pointed out in their brief, the provisions that allow for a Justice of the Peace to sit as a municipal court judge make sense as well, because those two positions are not being performed to the detriment of the other.
So you should note that as we're engaging in this discussion about the practice of law, 1.48 indicates as to this master position, it states a member of the State Bar of Nevada who's in good standing as a member of the State Bar and has been so for a minimum of 5 continuous years. And it merely calls for that. It doesn't talk about practicing.
Correct.
Are all the JPs taken, please?
No. This came about when the domestic violence specialty court came about. And it was done to eliminate the need to make 2 appearances and to kind of streamline the process.
Any further questions? Thank you, Ms.
Thank Person. You very much.
I'd like to compliment both lawyers on making this somewhat exciting for these students. I think they appreciate your advocacy. The court does thank the attorneys for their arguments and briefs in this matter. This matter is going to stand submitted, and I think that the students are going to go on a tour.